This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals only. Welcome to the Oncology Knowledge to Practice podcast, where we discuss game-changing topics in clinical oncology with leading experts in the field. In this series, we are considering best practice when managing cancers of the thyroid gland. This series is accredited, so if you'd like to receive CME credits, be sure to listen via our website at oncology.knowledgeintopractice.com. If you're listening on another platform, you'll find a link in the episode notes. This episode is supported by an educational grant from Eli Lilly, who have had no influence on the content or the choice of faculty. In our last episode, we discussed how precision medicine fits into thyroid cancer treatment guidelines. In today's episode, we're going to take a closer look at the guidance around when and how to test for biomarkers of response to precision medicines. To answer our questions on this topic, we welcome the expertise of Professor Fernando López Ríos. Professor López Ríos is a pathologist at the 12 de Octubre University Hospital in Spain. Before we jump into the interview, we'll spend a few minutes summarizing some of the guideline recommendations. If you are already familiar with the ESMO and NCCN guidance on biomarker testing, please feel free to skip ahead to the interview at the 3-minute mark. As we discussed in our last episode, the latest NCCN guidelines recommend testing for NTRK fusions, RET alterations, ALK fusions, BRAF mutations, microsatellite instability, DNA mismatch repair and tumor mutational burden in all newly diagnosed anaplastic B patients, and in advanced, progressive or threatening differentiated disease patients. For medullary thyroid cancer, they recommend screening for germline and then somatic RET mutations in all newly diagnosed patients. To provide further guidance on biomarker testing strategies, ESMO have published guidelines on the standard method to detect NTRK fusions and RET alterations in daily practice and clinical research. According to the NTRK testing guidance, while multiple testing methodologies could work in principle, including IHC, FISH, and RT-PCR, an NGS-targeted panel that reliably detects NTRK fusions would be ideal. In particular, if the RNA quality is optimal, targeted RNA sequencing methods may represent the gold standard for screening. If an NTRK fusion is identified with NGS, protein expression could then be confirmed by IHC to alleviate doubt. However, if sequencing platforms are not readily available, the guidelines recommend starting with IHC instead, and any positively detected NTRK fusion cases could then be confirmed by NGS. As for the RET testing guidelines, these differ for RET mutations, as found in medullary thyroid cancer, and RET fusions, as found in non-medullary thyroid cancer. For medullary thyroid cancer, the guidelines recommend patients be referred to a genetic counsellor given the potential for heritable disease, and they should first have a qPCR or NGS carried out on sputum or blood to identify a possible germline mutation. If there are no germline RET mutations, a qPCR or NGS analysis should be done on FFPE specimens if the patient becomes metastatic. For non-medullary thyroid cancer, the guidelines recommend to using NGS if FFPE specimens are available, or if NGS is not easily accessible. First use FISH or RT-PCR, and then use NGS if the result is negative. If the patient does not have a sufficient FFPE specimen, you can try a liquid biopsy, but you must take a solid biopsy if the result is negative. While these guidelines are a great starting point, many questions still remain around best practice for biomarker testing in thyroid cancer. For example, what is the best strategy to test for all NCCN recommended biomarkers? Here to provide us with expert guidance is Professor López Ríos, a pathologist at the 12 de Octubre University Hospital in Spain. Hi there. Welcome, Professor López Ríos. Thank you for joining us. So firstly, why do the guidelines recommend waiting until the disease is more advanced to test for biomarkers in differentiated disease? Is this always best, and how can we ensure this does not delay treatment?
Well, I think it's probably because guidelines need to address clinical problems, so it does make sense to recommend testing when you are going to need it. But on the other hand, I think we should start changing this paradigm and try to have predictive biomarkers as soon as possible, as soon as the patient has been diagnosed. I've always been a huge advocate of reflex testing and also trying to test patients in earlier stages. So sometimes this is not possible because of resources, etc. And I think in the case of thyroid carcinomas, it's probably wise not to test those small papillary thyroid carcinomas or very small tumors. But I would recommend reflex testing for aggressive papillary thyroid carcinomas, infiltrating the soft tissues of the neck or with lymph node metastasis, even if the results of predictive biomarkers are not going to be used at that very moment. I think there are huge advantages in this because you have access to the paraffin blocks, everything is well organized, you have all the information that you might need in the future, et cetera, et cetera.
For clinicians that want to test for all NCCN recommended biomarkers, including NCRK fusions, RET alterations, ALK fusions, BRAF mutations, microsatellite instability, DNA mismatch repair, and tumor mutational burden, what would be the most comprehensive testing methodology? For example, RNA or DNA-based, hotspot NGS or comprehensive genomic profiling, etc.
Well, I think now thyroid carcinoma patients are going to need comprehensive profiling. And the only way to achieve this, I think in a timely manner right now with so many predictive biomarkers and also genomic alterations that are very different. We have to look for mutations and at the same time fusions or other things as tumor mutational burden is to perform next generation sequencing. So I think now we are very lucky because we have a few options that we can run in-house. There are also commercially available options. And I think these targeted NGS panels do a great job at trying to provide all this information. Also, I think it's very important that we have results within 10 working days, even faster. And I think that's why trying to answer the first question again, it's important that we as pathologists are involved in all these workflows, and that means that we have to order NGS for all the patients that are going to need these results in a reflex manner. And I think that way the whole procedure is better organized and you have access to faster results. So in short, we need now next generation sequencing for patients with thyroid carcinomas, advanced thyroid carcinomas, because the number of alterations that we have to study, it's growing, and the complexity of these genomic findings makes it harder to choose a single gene as an approach.
Thank you for that. So ESMA recommended performing a liquid biopsy when testing for RET in non-medullary thyroid cancers without sufficient FFP specimens. Are there any other situations where you'd recommend using a liquid biopsy?
I think it's a very good option if you do not have access to to tissue. We do need to be aware of the sensitivity and the specificity of the technology that we are going to be using. And many times, at least the sensitivity is clearly linked to the clinical situation of the patient. What I mean by that is that if there is no metastasis outside of the thyroid gland or even the thoracic region or the head and neck region, the likelihood of finding these drivers is much lower. Probably that's my only concern when trying to integrate the results of liquid biopsies in the whole predictive biomarker scenario. I think it's also quite important to simultaneously or after we receive the results of our liquid biopsy efforts to try to obtain a rebiopsy if we don't find any actionable drivers. I think trying to coordinate all these efforts and to integrate the results of tissue and plasma sometimes it's not that easy because often these tests are performed in different labs by different people. So it's quite important that we manage to have all this information available when we are making clinical decisions.
Thank you. Are there any other recent technological innovations that clinicians should be aware of when it comes to incorporating thyroid cancer biomarker testing guidelines into their practice?
Well, I think for me that the most relevant, I think, technological innovation in the space is that we now have access to rapid next generation sequencing approaches, which means that we can have results in a few working days in fully automated lab workflows with very little hands-on time. And I would think that at least for me, this is a major change in the field. Along those lines, I think it's also relevant that we now have also access to multiplexed real-time PCR panels that sometimes include information on most, if not all, of the biomarkers that we need to study on a given patient. And these approaches are not as comprehensive as next generation sequencing, obviously, but it could be a first step before you do NGS, or if you don't have access to NGS, at least you can try to obtain information from a few of these predictive biomarkers.
Is there guidance that clinicians can refer to when interpreting biomarker testing results in clinical practice?
Well, for me, trying to interpret biomarker testing results in clinical practice, it's not that easy. And probably the main reason is because we have the clinical information, we have also the histological information. Many times we have information from single gene approaches. And then many of these patients at the end have next generation sequencing results. So trying to make sense out of all this complexity and making sure that a group of people are aware of all these results and have an interesting discussion around them is sometimes challenging. That's why I think it's important to discuss all these patients in clinical tumor boards. And these clinical tumor boards should start to incorporate the molecular results, the biomarker results into their discussion. Sometimes there is no time. That's what's, for example, now happening in our institution. So we have a separate molecular tumor board where we specifically address the biomarker testing challenges indications. And if specifically we want to look up what to do with a given result, I am a huge fan of, for example, OncoKB, which is a one of these web pages where you can look up the level of evidence per genomic alteration, and also try to classify the finding, and I think it's a good place to start. There are other options as well. We should also don't forget about PubMed, because many times the field is moving so fast that there's just no time for all these repositories to have information in real time of maybe the latest publication. But in short, I think the most important message is to try to have a lot of communication with everyone involved in the clinical care of these patients.
And finally, are there any other guidelines you'd refer clinicians to when considering best practice in biomarker testing in thyroid cancer?
I think a good place to start would be to review the NCCN guidelines, particularly the footnotes that sometimes we don't have time to read. And then I would probably read the ESMO guidelines on RED testing and the ESMO guidelines on NTRK testing, just because I think these two biomarkers are challenging, because fusions are always challenging to search for. And also in the case of RED, we should not forget about RED mutations in medullary thyroid carcinomas, and they're also included in that RED testing guideline. There's also a lot of technological information in these two guidelines regarding the advantages and disadvantages of the different methodologies, the different NGS approaches. We should not forget that to look for fusions, RNA-based NGS is always best, because it's more, has better sensitivity than DNA-only NGS. And then finally, I think if we want to understand tumor mutational burden and maybe microsatellite instability or DNA mismatch repair, I think there are a couple of additional ESMO guidelines. For example, there's one specifically looking into the need for next generation sequencing in predictive oncology. That is also a good read. So I think probably in summary, it would be most helpful to look for biomarker specific guidelines than to look for thyroid carcinoma guidelines in this case, just because some of these predictive biomarkers are also needed outside thyroid carcinoma patients.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for joining us. If you haven't done so already, feel free to head over to our website at oncology.knowledgeintopractice.com, where you can claim your CME credits, and you'll also find other free educational resources in oncology. You can find a link to this in the episode notes, as well as all the references discussed today. If you enjoyed this episode, do subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app, or recommend us to your colleagues, and join us next month for our next episode in this thyroid cancer series.